Hey guys, welcome to the High With Us podcast. Dude, we're with Chris Root, man. We just finished up his mastermind event. It was amazing. Super, super happy to have met Chris. I followed his content like 4 or 5 years ago on YouTube. But just to meet you in person, man, to see like you're a real guy, the stuff like politically incorrect. Dude, you're, I guess it was like better than I expected, man. Super, super cool to be hanging out at the house with Chris right now.
Hey man, I appreciate hanging out with Feathers. Southerner as well, but you're from California, right?
No, originally from Chicago.
No offense.
Yeah. So we got a Yankee with us, but I got a Southerner with me from San Antonio, right?
True blue Texan.
Yeah. That's right. No, it was great, man. I enjoyed you guys' company. Y'all gave a lot of good information. It was real good because you know we were heavily focusing on land development, and you guys are doing land, so it was just a really good mesh for you guys to come in and give value. It was fun.
Dude, no doubt in our mind that you had really, really good speakers come here. So the people that you're connected with, the value that they brought, like we feel like we're doing pretty good in real estate, but like you brought some unique people that are doing some cool things, man, and very, very heavy hitters. So we did a little promotional video for you, and that's what we talked about. Like, man, like no matter how good you think you're doing, getting different rooms and people are doing different things, man. So it's amazing.
Yeah, there's always levels, right? You know, and you got to humble yourself, and I try to put myself in uncomfortable positions and. Should I bring people that come speak that are doing bigger things than I am? Because in the entrepreneur game, there's no room for ego, right?
Yeah.
You can't have an ego because then you never learn and you think you know everything and you always want to be right, right? And that's the problem with a lot of entrepreneurs. They have massive egos and there's nothing wrong with having a massive ego to think highly of yourself. But you also don't want to be humble either because that's another stupid word I don't like. But you also have to know when another man, has more knowledge and wisdom than you do, you sit down and shut the fuck up and listen.
Yeah. That's what I was about to bring up right now, is that you guys crushed the word humility, and I love that because we're kind of of the same mind, right? Like, yeah, you should not be humble. I think I saw, it was Michael Jordan. He was like, dude, he's like, you have no idea the mind games I had to play with myself to get myself out of where I was.
Yeah.
He's like, so that humble shit, you can leave that in the back burner. Yeah, it ain't happening.
No, that's not a good thing. that's for emotionally weak people. And they don't have good intentions. When another person tells you to be humble, they don't have good intentions for you. They're doing that out of their own insecurities to bring you down to their level. And they're scared. They're scared of your action or your level of competency or your level of skill set. So they need to bring you down in order to make themselves feel better about themselves.
Dude, the inside of my hat just went because I'm not gonna say the two people that I can think of right now that tell me, hey, always remain humble, stay humble. Like, obviously, yes, for sure, right? Because we don't think we're like anything, but humility, it could be, that's a dangerous, that's a slippery slope. Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between humility and being humble. Like, if you look up the word humble, it means thinking lesser than yourself.
Yeah, and I'm not with
so,
that.
I'm not saying go out there and tell everybody, hey, you're a fucking piece of shit and I'm better than you. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about your internal dialogue about yourself.
To yourself.
You don't go around and tell everybody, hey, I'm better than you. No, you talk to yourself. You should be your own best friend. As an entrepreneur, this shit is so hard. If you're not your biggest cheerleader, if you're not your best friend, telling yourself, hey, man, you can do this. You deserve this. You can do this if you put your mind to it. That's what I'm talking about when I say talk to yourself. Don't be humble. I don't mean go out there and, you know, amongst the crowd and tell.
Braggadocious, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's not. It's not what I mean.
It's an internal dialogue. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great distinction.
So a lot of people, they struggle with like success, and I think it comes from internal. So a lot of people, like, you have to be internally motivated to succeed. And I like what you said. Is like no fucking off. Like no fucking off. But you have to internally make the decision to want to succeed and try to succeed no matter what it takes. I think a lot of people are afraid to, like, they dip their toe in it and they're like, oh, it's not working, you know. I just stick my toe in, that's it. It's not working. So, go ahead.
I got a inkling that somebody brought you up that was maybe they were hard on you and they pushed you to excel. So where'd you get it from? Is it like, were you born like that or where did it come from?
So, yeah, I'll give him credit. So my stepfather was a fucking hard man.
Wow.
Hard. And I was his stepchild. Mama had me with her first marriage. I was the only sibling, only son. Then she got remarried to a man who had already had three kids from a previous marriage. And I came in, and then they had two kids together. So I was the redheaded stepchild of the family. And I wasn't the easiest kid to be around. I was real high energy, ADD.
Don't say.
You still are.
Nothing's changed, right? So I was... I was a hard child to be around. And he was hard as nails. He would wake me up when I was 13 and 14 years old if he knew I stayed up late on a Friday night and make me cut the grass on Saturday morning, even though I had cut the grass Monday.
Damn.
And he'd come outside and he'd say, he'd walk and he'd inspect my work. He says, you see that over there? You missed those spots. I want you to weed eat to the dirt. He would make me weed eat to the dirt. I would never forget those exact words. In addition to that, growing up, you know, in South Louisiana, it's hot. He would not let me or my stepbrothers stay in the air conditioner. We had to go outside. And he says, you want to be cool? You go sit underneath the tree. I didn't have AC when I was growing up.
Man.
And he'd work us like a dog. And I hated him and I hated his guts for it. Most of my young adult life, but it wasn't until I was 22 that I saw that the values and the work ethic he instilled in me were freaking priceless, because when I became a man, literally I could outwork everybody because I was already being worked like a dog.
I love that, dude. I told Daniel this. I said, I don't know what to think of Chris before we got here. I said, but after this mastermind event, dude, I love that guy. He's like, he's exactly like us. And that was my daddy. My dad would, like, if I was asleep on Saturday morning, he'd kick my bed, bro.
Yep.
Kick the fucking bed, like, man, get up. No matter what time you went to bed, get your ass up, lazy ass, like, dude. And I didn't know that about you. You just told me that right now. And man, dude, I already kind of knew. So that's cool, man. I love to know that about you.
I think it's a Southern thing, and I think we're losing that Southern hard knocks, virtuous man, you know, to...
Not me and you, guys like me and you can help it.
Well, no, we still have it, but I mean, overall, the country is, it's getting soft, and you're not supposed to spank kids. My mama would beat my ass with a workout belt, the big workout belts, because she was an aerobics instructor, and she would lift weights, and she would beat my ass with a belt when I was bad, and you can't do that no more.
Yeah.
Right?
I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I must have been 8, 10, and I was crying, my dad fucking punched me in the forehead, dude. Quit being a pussy.
Yep.
So like, never a pussy again. So now, like, it's a whole different level, man. Like, yeah, you see what's happening with the country, with people, the softening of men. I'm not gonna stand for it. I know you're not.
No,
and
hell
I
no.
I think we need to incorporate that into our brands immediately.
We have to. Like, with my sons, every one of my kids has to fight. We have, matter of fact, today on Friday, every Friday, I have a personal jiu-jitsu and MMA trainer that comes.
Ever since you said that, I'm like already hiring one when I get back. As soon as I get back.
Yep.
Jiu-jitsu trainer at the house.
Not because I want them to fight, but I want them to know how to fight, and that way they when you think that'll help with your self-esteem, right?
Yeah.
When you know you can defend yourself and you know you can handle business, that automatically raises your self-esteem. Look, 2,500 years ago, 2,000 years ago, the Greeks and Romans, if you were a male, you had to learn how to fight.
Yeah.
You had to go to war. Now boys can't figure out if they're a boy or a girl or a pussycat.
Yeah, that's something that we think about all the time, and something that we talk about, man. And I do the same thing with my son. You know, like, I'm like, you're not gonna, you're gonna have this torch, whether you like it or not. But it's like the warrior in the garden theory, right?
Yep.
Yep. You should at least know how to be dangerous.
Yep. The old saying, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war, right? And I think if you can make life hard on your children, first off, life is going to be way harder on them than you ever could be.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Life's hard.
Life is fucking hard. And I think a lot of bullshit happens on social media. I think where a lot of people have grown up on Hollywood, TV, and all. It's just not real, right? Life is so hard that if you're not hard on your kids, it'll kick their ass, right? All the kids you see that have the rich parents and they give them everything, it fucking ruins them, right? It's almost a reverse thing, you know, and that's kind of the double-edged sword of being an entrepreneur and trying to make a bunch of money is not ruining your kids and spoiling them.
I'm telling them right now, I'm not leaving you a damn thing.
Yep.
You're not going to get a dollar. The day I die, you're broke.
Yep.
You need to make your own damn money. I'm not leaving them anything. When I first started real estate, I said, I'm going to leave them a trust and cash flow and all this bullshit. You're not getting anything. I've been telling them right now, when I die, you're broke.
Yeah.
You better figure out how to make your own money.
You want to leave them with skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you feel about raising like 4 boys? Because I grew up in, I'm the youngest of 4 brothers.
Yep.
And you have a daughter too. But you have a family of 5. How is it like managing life and fatherhood and business? Because people like us, we can't turn it off.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, man. Yeah. How do you feel like in the home dynamic?
It was control chaos. I think, you know, I'm 43 right now. There's seasons and cycles to life. I've been having kids since I was 17. I got my wife, a girlfriend pregnant, Patty, who's my wife now, when I was 17.
My wife's Patty named too.
Oh, really?
We're the same age. There's a lot of overlap between.
Oh, your wife is named Patty too?
Yeah.
That's an old Western name, Patty.
She's 42.
Okay.
We're the same age.
That is super
same
cool.
Same family dynamic. Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So I got her pregnant when I was a junior at a private Catholic school.
And, are you Catholic to this day? I am, just FYI.
I'm more non-denominational, put it that way.
All right.
I, as far as Catholic, I think the Catholics have probably went, they've become too archaic, meaning too ancient and too ritualistical. I think the New Age Christian, New Age Catholic is probably, let's put it this way. The Catholic religion has been doing the same thing for 2,000 years, right? Yeah. Stand up, sit down, do the Santa Cross, count the rosary. It's so ancient that I think a lot of people have lost touch with it, right? The Catholic Church is actually has the fastest losses of people leaving the church.
I'm going to bring them back.
I hope so. But Christianity as a whole, I mean, there's so many different sects of Christianity. You got non-denominational, you got Catholic, you got this or that. You know, for me, I'm more of the camp, hey, do the right thing.
Be a good person.
Be a good person.
Basics.
Yeah, basics. I really love stoicism.
Yeah, I do too, man. When you guys started talking about that, I was like, dude, I've been studying this for like 20 years.
Yeah. I think stoicism and philosophy have a lot of correlations to religion and being a virtuous man and doing hard shit. I think they need to bring that back, right? So, but getting off in a, you know, religion is a personal thing, right? I don't care if you're Buddhist, Catholic, Christian, Muslim, Jewish. I mean, they all...
It's all this one compass pointing at the same thing.
They're all worshiping the same thing from a different angle.
Yes,
and then killing each other, saying each other's wrong and mine right.
I agree.
It's all... I've studied just about every religion. They all say the same thing in different words.
I did too, man. For a long time, I lost my religion. For a couple of years, I just said, like, there's no God.
Yep.
I went through some dark times.
Yep.
And I clawed my way back, but I went through a lot of scripture, and I was like, wait a minute, this looks very familiar.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're all talking about the same thing, being a good person. But what I'm afraid for our generation to lose is you got to be a hard man.
Yeah.
You should be a hard man over being a soft man, because the kids need it.
Yeah.
Right now, more than ever.
And spirituality, you know, I do. Whatever religion you are, I think you're a spiritual being having a humanoid existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You're a little bit darker than me. You could tell you're of Mexican descent. So are you. I'm a white male European mixed up, and my mom is a Native American Cherokee, right? I don't care what color you are, what religion you are on this planet. We are all spiritual beings having a humanoid existence in a meat body. I believe that truly. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
And you got people fighting over skin color, race, religion.
It's the most stupid shit, but it's programming.
If
you're stupid enough to fall into that programming.
It is programming by the elites, by the powers that be, that need to get you to fight each other while they... Yep, it's called divide and conquer, right?
You know, I've never been political. I'm a Trump lover, okay? But I've never been political my whole life. And I've always admired Donald Trump. But when my dad, he'll be watching like Fox News or whatever on TV, and I'm like, I've never been involved in politics, never looked into it, but I'm watching the TV screen, and I'm like, Dad, this is like WWF. I was like, those guys are arguing. I said, but they're friends. This is before I got into politics. I said, those guys know each other. They're very good friends, and they're pretending to hate each other. And he's like, oh, you know, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, no. We know what's happening. It's the elites trying to pit us against each other so that we don't, like, catch up to their game.
Politicians are ugly actors.
That's all it is.
They're just ugly actors.
Yeah.
And they look at us as the peasants. And, you know, it's a power game. It's just a big power game. And if you understand that, you can kind of maneuver and not get caught up in the bullshit. It's all a big power game, and it's a horse and pony show.
Yeah. And it's up to guys like us to distill the information.
Yep.
And then to translate and then let the people know, like, hey, we ain't doing it like this time. Wherever you guys think this thing was heading, it's not going there. Not if I can help it.
Well, you see all this divide and conquer. They want you to fight over race, religion, whatever it may be. In my experience, and I'm from the deep south, South Louisiana, Lafayette, Louisiana is about as deep south as they get.
You can't go any further south.
They try to say that, you know, that the south is racist and this and that.
Nope.
Listen,
I don't know a racist motherfucker in Texas.
That is the most opposite bullshit I've ever seen. You go downtown anywhere over here and you'll see blacks with whites, whites with Mexicans. Like, people genuinely, if you're a good person, no matter what color you are, they love, we naturally love each other.
Yeah.
Now, are we tribal?
Absolutely.
Why are we tribal? Because we still come from human nature.
Protection right. mechanism.
When you come back, when it thus settles, you still want to be with your kind, right? Just like nature. A blue jay doesn't hang around with a cardinal. A cardinal doesn't hang around with a blackbird. A blackbird doesn't typically hang around with a hawk. But you know what? They all hang out on the same tree and talk to one another. It's nature.
Wow.
It is nature. But you still all hang out with one another, still talk with one another. So they're pushing all this, you know, transgender stuff, and you know,
so sad, man.
So, but overall, if you look at everybody, I don't believe black people don't like white people, and I don't believe white people.
I've never seen it, bro.
I don't see it.
I've never seen it.
Have you? Do you get some racial slurs here and there? Sure, but overall, dude, people love everybody else. It's all bullshit. Absolute bullshit.
No, dude, I agree. I was born and raised, and man, I always tell this story. When I was a kid, me and my dad, we were general contractors, right? And there was a white contractor who was rehabbing this apartment complex. And a white man hired us, and he wasn't treating us right. So we went to the main GC to like, hey, you know, we can do cheaper, we better work, everything. And he said, nope. He said he would rather hire a white guy that sucks than to hire us directly to save money. He'd rather pay more money than not have to deal with those Mexicans. And we still took the job. We needed the money, bro. So that's the only like racism that I could remember growing up. But in the South, man, everybody loves everybody, bro.
Well,
everybody's giving you a helping hand, bro.
Yeah. Well, I've got a better one. I don't like hiring white people for my jobs. I'd rather, two out of three contractor users are Mexicans, and I'd rather use them. They still have fundamental values. They work hard. Most of them aren't on drugs. Yeah, they like to drink their beer after work, but they don't come to work high and drunk all the time.
Yeah.
The Mexican culture is very conservative, very hardworking, very virtuous in the sense that they take care of their family.
There's a pride to their work.
Yeah, they take pride in their work.
Yeah.
Mexicans build this house. Mexicans are building that house across the street.
Yeah.
Right? So are there different cultures and that you should respect? Yes, I don't believe that all this mixing, and I'm gonna be politically incorrect, I don't believe in all this mixing of the cultures. That's what makes us human. If we're all the same and we have no differences, what's the point of being human, right? I love the Mexican culture. Mexican food is my favorite food. I'm a white guy with some Native American in me, right? So imagine if we were all the same. What fun would that be if we all looked the same? It would be no fun. Imagine having no culture. No Chinese culture, no Western culture, no Mexican culture, no European culture, no Chinese culture. What fun would that be?
That's what they're pointing at right now. That's what the elites, that's what the media is pointing at right now. It's like, hey, if you guys are different, you should argue.
Yep.
No, you should be proud of it.
No, you should be fascinated.
Yeah.
Fascinated with the culture. Hey, this is how y'all do things. Man, that's so cool. I love to travel and see other different cultures. It's freaking cool.
I love that because we came here and we went to dinner and we ordered a bunch of appetizers. Like, what is it? I don't know. Like, oh, it's alligator. Like, I've never had alligator before. Yep. We're eating alligator.
That's right. It's a culture thing.
Yeah.
Right?
We're having fun.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny to poke fun at different cultures and be, you know, just silly about it, right? That's what makes us human. So
yeah, I remember growing up, we used to talk shit about everybody, yellows and everybody. Yeah. Dude, we used to just talk. It was funny.
Yeah.
And now everybody's so offended.
So yeah. At the end of the day, when it's nut cutting time, the human race comes together and pulls for everybody.
Yeah, every time.
Every time.
Yeah. I, one thing I could say about Texas, people are like, oh, how's Texas? If your car dies at the stoplight, you don't have to do anything. People immediately exit their vehicle and push you out of the way. You don't have to flag nobody down. You don't have to do nothing. They just help you. You're like, damn. I was at a traffic light one time. This guy's in a van. He had all this wood on top of his truck. He slams the brakes at the light. All the wood freaking falls off the top of his van all over the street, dude. I'm talking about like 4,000 2x4s. And everybody just came in, started just loading it on the side of the road. Boom, boom, boom. That's the human race in action, man. And all this shit you see on the news is not true.
No, it's all bullshit. I remember I took Patty last year to Houston. We were looking at a business opportunity. And somebody said, hey, you need to go to this club. It's a cowboy club where you dance. It's in Houston. It's called the Stampede. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of it?
No.
In Houston.
Is that where you and your broke back friends go?
Yeah, that's where we go. But it was the coolest thing. I brought Patty there, and I think it's going to be a bunch of white cowboys.
Yeah.
We got there. We were so fascinated. Every race, every color, every creed of cowboy was there. There was Chinese cowboys with cowboy hats and their cowboy boots student, you know, doing the line dance.
It's a celebration of cowboyism.
It's Texas.
Yeah, a celebration.
Right? It's a celebration of Texas culture, and it was every race, every religion, black, white, they had Chinese cowboys.
Never seen it.
I've never seen it. I've never seen a Chinese cowboy. I knew there was a lot of Mexican cowboys, a lot of blacks, and it was a mixture, and everybody was dancing and cutting up, and that is America.
America as a whole, bro.
Yes, and it gave me the chills watching it. And Pat's like, look at how cool. Cause you don't see that often. You don't see that in South Louisiana.
So I saw a video recently. It was, as long as you respect it and honor it, it's all fair game.
This is the real America, bro. The real America is people coming together, helping each other. And what you see on the news and the TV is not real. You know, it's not real at all. And you know, when you're from Texas, I had an Uber driver, and he was like, oh, something. I grew up in New Jersey and all this stuff. I said, oh, cool, you're from Jersey? He goes, no, I'm from Texas. I was like, oh, I like this guy.
Yep.
Yeah, and he was like, no, that's true, man. When you get to the South, right, I'm sure Louisiana's the same.
Yeah. Well, I think Texas is the heartbeat of America.
It is the
quintessential purest form of Americans is Texas. Because it's the American way of life. And then everything else, I think, spreads out and has different cultures. But that is the truest form of America is Texas. I believe that.
Oh, dude, thank you for saying that, dude. And I feel the same way about Louisiana. I feel like everybody we've met so far has been amazing, dude. So
amazing.
I told the Uber driver, I was like, dude, I said, when you get here, I said, you're not black, you're not white, you're not Chinese. You get your gun, you get your Bible.
That's right.
You pick up your arms, and you're Texan now.
Yep.
And you better defend it.
That's exactly right. Yep. And it works, and it's the American way of life, you know, the guns, Bible, bullets, beans, and hard work.
I literally have a Bible and three pistols on my dresser right by my bed.
I don't know if y'all noticed that pistol on the side of my...
That's the first thing I saw, dude.
It's in the camera.
The first thing I saw when I got
and that,
here.
That's just, I have one there, I got one in my room, and it just, there, you know, right. It's just, that's just our way of life.
Yeah.
Right? Not because I want to hurt anybody, but it's just protection.
Yeah. I'd rather have it and not need it.
Yep.
Than to need it and not have it.
100%.
Yeah, I'm never trying to hurt. I'm never going to shoot anybody in my life. I already know I'm not going to shoot anybody in my life. But there's always going to be a gun close by me.
That's right. 100%.
Dude, so tell us a little bit about your real estate career, man. Like what possessed you?
Let's start early. So you start, well, I know a little about this because you started at 22.
That's when I started my first business.
22 at business. Like, what... Like, it's fucking crazy starting that young. And like, what was like the growing pains? I know you started a mechanic shop.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about like growing pains, employees, dealing with all that stuff early on.
Well, let me back up so you can know who I am as a child and how I got into entrepreneurship. Okay. I tell you, I was, you know, ADD, ADHD, all this bullshit they label these kids that just have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
When we're just high energy functioning kids.
Yeah.
So they put me on Adderall and Ritalin when I was probably 7 years old, which if you're listening to this and you got a child, that don't put your kid on that shit. It's fucking legalized crystal meth. It's terrible for you.
You should not give your kid medication at all.
Ever. It's a synthetic drug. They try to say, oh, you have a chemical imbalance. No, your kid is just a high functioning individual, right? He's probably just a high D, a high driver, which most entrepreneurs are. I didn't realize that until I got older and I started understanding personalities and the way I am in drivers and entrepreneurship. So fast forward, got put on Adderall and Ritalin when I was 7. When I was 21, by the time I was 21, I was a drug addict. Wow. Because I had been on meth.
For your whole life?
My whole life. And I didn't know who I was. And I was already I was just a wild child. And I was, you know, just very outlandish because I was always high. But I didn't know. I just thought, I'm supposed to take this medicine. My parents didn't know any better.
Yeah.
So at 21, I got caught up with other drugs, partying and stuff. I took myself to zero at 21. I was like, man, I am better than this. I know something ain't right. I went and checked myself into a rehab clinic on my 21? Own at 21.
That's a big decision.
Yes.
That's huge.
Because I was addicted to Adderall. I said, I need to get off this. This is not good. So did that, checked myself into that, got clean. And that was my start of my personal development journey. And that's what I want to, because that's really where my life changed, is when I did the program, I got off the drugs, and then I started deep diving personal development. I started reading book after book on how to be a better person, philosophy, business, sales, marketing. I joined a business group when I was 22 called Wise. I was 22 years old, right? I didn't know anything of this, but I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I don't know why, I wanted to be. I was hard-headed, I couldn't keep a job. So I joined that business group, and I was in college at UL here, and I joined that group, and I freaking learned so much about business, and I became a personal development junkie. And I do believe entrepreneurs that we're extremists.
Absolutely.
Everything we do.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
It's 120%. If I'm gonna do drugs, hey, let's do drugs and party. I was the best freaking. All of them, and let's freaking go, right? Anything I do, I'm just gonna do 120%. Yeah. So I just redirected that energy into something productive instead of counterproductive, right? Yeah. And then from there, I just went all into personal development, started studying business. Then I started thinking, what can I do to make money? I'm in college, I wanna be an entrepreneur. My dad sent me to get the oil change in one of his vehicles. I was working for my dad in the oil field at the time. He had a little rental tool company. And he sent me to get the oil change, and I noticed that people were taking a little while to go in there. They were complaining, and the light bulb went off in my head. I said, I bet you if I do on-site oil change, I could go meet them at their house or work, and I can make a killing because they don't have to leave, and I can charge almost double just for the convenience. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed $100 from my dad. I didn't even know how to change oil. He showed me how to change oil in his Dodge Diesel Cummings. I was like, this is easy. Just drain the oil and change the filter. Borrowed $100, got a set of wrenches, oil bin to catch, and made me some business cards. And I started handing out all around here in Lafayette, all the fleet accounts.
How old were you?
I was 22.
Sick.
That's when I started. And I was a junior in college. Started handing out cards everywhere, and dude, it blew up. It's just like I thought, people didn't want to leave work and waste their whole hour trying to get their oil changed. So I was going and just changing oil in between. I was taking about 12 to 15 hours in college. So I had a jumpsuit on. I would come to my college class full of oil in a jumpsuit in between running to class. Sick. And I did that till I graduated a year and a half later. And by the time I graduated, I had diversified into doing detail work, oil change, and auto glass, repairing and replacing windshields. By the time I was 23 when I graduated, I had made $115,000. This is 2005 when I graduated. That was a lot of money for 23 years old. So I graduated college and I'm like, I'm not going to get a job. Yeah. My buddies are going to get jobs for $35,000, $40,000 a year. I made six figures. I'm going to keep doing this. So I said, you know what, I'm gonna scale this. So I started hiring people. I got more trucks on the road, and I got that up to a couple $100,000. And then I hit another wall. I was like, this is not scalable. I need a shop. This is 2007, 3 months before the 2008 crash. I found an opportunity to buy a store. Well, let me back up. I found an opportunity to rent a store that somebody wasn't paying their lease. And I went to talk to the owner. She kicked him out because he wasn't making payments. And I got to lease my first shop. I doubled my income. 6 months later, I was like, okay, I got this shop humming. I want another shop. That's how I just always want to go more. I got caught wind that another guy who was on drugs that owned another shop in one of the busiest spots here where I live on Johnson Street had a lube shop, a mechanic shop that he wasn't paying his taxes, and he was about to lose it. So I was like, I went talk to him, and we made a deal. I was 25, 26 at the time. We made a deal at $860,000. This is back in 2007. I didn't have to buy his shop. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I had decent credit. I went to my banker, said we could get the deal done. It's, we have to do SBA if you got good credit. I said, well, I got good credit, and you have to come up with 20% of the loan. It's like, fuck, I don't have that money. Well, this is 2007. I don't know if you guys are older. 2007, the real estate market was booming. Remember that?
I was in construction at the time, so I didn't know anything about real estate, but my construction company was fucking jamming.
Yeah, jamming. Everything was booming. I timed it. I put my house for sale at the top of the market. I had built a little spec house like maybe 3-4 years prior to that, and it almost doubled in value. I put it for sale. It sold 32 days later, and 10 days before I was supposed to close on that SBA loan, I made $126,000. I needed $125,000. I took that $125,000, I put it down on the SBA loan, bought an $860,000 shop on the busiest street where I live, doubled my income again.
Damn.
Then I bought a foreclosure, lived in that, I believe it was like 16 months, sold that, and I had a piece of land I had sold. And every time I would sell my house or sell a piece of property, I would take that and I'd use it as a down payment to buy another shop. I did that four times. I had four locations here in Lafayette. I had the busiest, biggest mechanic shop, Quick Lube, in Lafayette at 26 years old. I had four locations, 33 employees. I was doing about $3 million in revenue, which is not a whole lot of money, but for 26 years old, it was a lot of money for me, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of money for you.
So that was the start of my entrepreneurial career mixed in with real estate. So I owned the real estate except for, you know, I ended up buying all the stores except for one of them. I was just leasing. Did that up until 2011. And I was like, man, I'm making a lot of money. I had like $250,000 saved up. I was like, let me get back into real estate. Started looking at buying more, some rental properties. And I didn't understand how to buy right and how to buy cheap back then just quite yet. Because the house I had bought, it was just timing. Because literally when I sold that house, 3 months later, the market crashed in 2008. I would have lost all the value in the house. I just timed it. It was no skill.
I was thinking about that. Dude.
All timing.
Sold it the ultimate perfect divine time.
The perfect time. It was not skill. It was absolute luck and timing. It happens like that sometimes. When you're intentional about things, you know, the universe kind of lines up, things happen. But, and we'll tie into some more stories about that. 2011 came and I was like, I want to buy some rental property. So I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that book opened my eyes up to assets, right? You kind of instinctively know that, but you need to be told that.
It's good instruction manual.
Yes, absolutely. So I was like, well, I need to buy some rental property. So I started making a bunch of offers on MLS and buying okay deals, buying at 80 cents on the dollar, which I don't recommend. You need to buy cheaper than that, right?
Yeah.
It's not.
80, like, I'll take that all
yeah.
day.
That's a bigger pocket buyer.
That's a bigger pot. Yeah, that's an amateur buyer. Listen, I don't buy like that no more. If I can't steal it, I don't buy it. That's how you're going
to
hedge.
I roll for houses. But if you're going to give it to me,
that's right.
I'm not going to buy it.
If you,
I'll sell stupid or something, I'm not going to buy it.
If you can't steal it legally, morally, and ethically, you have no business buying real estate.
I love that you said that too, man. Legally, morally, ethically. You can destroy it in real estate and still be a good person.
Absolutely. You just find the person that's willing to trade out equity for fast sale.
Yeah.
A motivated seller. They have a problem.
Trading equity for time.
That's it. And they're out there. And you don't have to bullshit people. You don't. I just tell them straight up, hey, this is my pitch for you guys. Listen, I don't want to waste your time or mine. I'm not a retail buyer. If you need to get full retail, you can just maybe go ahead and list it with my wife. Otherwise, I got cash and I can close quick, but I'm going to need a good deal because I'm an investor and I'm not buying it to live here, right? I got to make money on this house. So that's my script. And they either say, no, I can't, or Chris, I totally understand. I'm not looking to get 100% of the value. I just need to get out of this house quick.
Yeah.
If you can give me a, you know, offer, I'll consider it. That's the game.
That's
and X amount of those will equal X amount of deals.
Talk to more people.
And you just, and then it's a numbers game. You got to talk to maybe 30, 40 people before you get that one good deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't understand that game back in 2010. I was just buying whatever. Ended up buying a bunch of single family homes, overpaying for shit. And then 2014 came and oil went from $125 a barrel to $25 a barrel. And destroyed the economy here in South Louisiana because I had a bunch of fleet accounts that was from the oil field and I lost like a quarter of my fleet accounts and it was not good. And then half my, and I ended up buying a lot of houses that were higher end, like $150,000, $200,000 houses because I didn't want to buy lower end houses. And I was in a bind. I started losing revenue every quarter to the point where I got to where I was losing $20,000 a month.
On the houses?
No, off my, but
just on the business.
Between everything, sure. The house, I had bought 33 single family homes and I had four locations and I had just had my third child. I had a nervous breakdown. You know, I was like, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, and I didn't want to tell my wife. So I was like, I take that back. My nervous breakdown was in 2008, right? But I had that was the first breakdown I had because I had just bought all those shops. Things got really hairy too right after I bought all those shops. Let me back up because the first time I almost went bankrupt was right after I bought all those shops. I had bought all those shops, then 2008 happened, and on top of that, we had two hurricanes that hit back to back. I just bought four shops, and I had people on salary, and I still had to pay them.
Yep.
And I had literally been in the business with all four of those shops maybe 6 months. I had zero money. I couldn't even make payroll. I had to put payroll on my American Express and then tell American Express I couldn't pay them.
Dang.
And then I had to let everybody go.
I've done that before.
Yeah. If you're in business, it happens. There's no guru shit. Like, this is real. This is business, right? Yeah. You're going to have cash flow problems. All this bullshit, like, oh, you just start a business, you make a bunch of money. Absolute horseshit. This is true entrepreneur stories.
Yep.
I had to let everybody, I say everybody go. I let all the hands go and all just the key people stayed. And we did everything. We all did the jobs of two or three people. And we soldiered our way out of that. It took me about a year to get back to where I was, okay, we're okay. Everything stabilized. 2009. That was my first experience of almost going bankrupt. Yes. Then 2014 came and it happened again because the oil went from $125 a barrel to $25 a barrel and my shop started doing the same shit, but it felt like it was even worse than 2008. And I was like, shit, what am I gonna do? Patty, we had our fourth child and I was like, you know what? Real estate got me here. Real estate can get me out of this shit. So I started YouTubing, wow. YouTubing real estate investing, and that's where 2014.
We started on YouTube?
Yes.
Wow.
10 years in the game.
Sick.
2014, I started, and then a black guy came up on YouTube saying, I'm not a guru, I'm a guru.
So
I'm not
that's how I found you, Max Maxwell.
No, not Max. No, it was another guy, Nasari.
I
forget his name, his full name. But anyway,
I
watched him on YouTube, and he was saying you can wholesale properties, you can buy properties and flip them and make money without buying them and rehab. I was like, man, that sounds cool. How the hell you wholesale a house? I watched all his YouTube stuff, and I actually ended up doing a deal, and I made $2,500 on my first deal just from YouTube University. I was like, okay, there's something to this. I hired three mentors back to back to back right after that. I paid them each $5,000. This is 2014. My first mentor stole $50,000 from me.
Damn.
Fabian Calvo. Yep. He's from California. You can look it up. I had him arrested. He had my credit card on file, and he freaking ran my credit card up, and I had him arrested. He got on drugs around the same time.
Whoa.
Yep. Second mentor was great. I learned a bunch of stuff from him, and literally 30 days after my second mentor, I made $47,000 on two deals. And I was like, that's it. But this is by myself, but just putting out a bunch of bandit signs. Yeah. And I was still running my shops and just in between going and I'd put out bandit signs, go and look at properties in between.
Hustle.
I was hustling big time. Do you guys know how many brake jobs, oil changes, tire rotations that I got to make $47,000 net?
Yeah.
Payroll, overhead, mistakes, insurance, building notes, because I owned all the buildings.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm in the wrong business. I had an awakening. I was like, I just made net $47,000. I said, I'm in the wrong business. I had a meeting with all my guys. After I closed, I remember the night before, I remember thinking, I had to pinch myself, like, is this real? I felt like I was doing something illegal. How am I making $47,000? Because I might have had 2 or 3 hours worth of work between both of them.
Yeah.
So then I, after we closed, I was like, I'm doing this full time. I had a meeting with all my managers. I threw them the keys. I said, y'all don't call me unless somebody dies. And I never looked back. And I went full time. Wholesaling and flipping, or wholesaling first. Wholesaling kept me from going bankrupt in 2014. I was taking I started making 30, 40, 50, 60, $80,000 a month, and I was losing about $10,000 to $20,000 of my shops. I was funneling it, covering all my losses on my shop. I put all my shops for sale, and I sold off all of them but one, and then went full time real estate. And then from there, I was. Personal development junkie. I was going to all the masterminds. I went to the very first 10X in 2016 at Grant Cardone. Sat in the very
Cardone.
With Cardone and went. I brought my wife and we watched him. And I just went all in. After that, I ended up doing some stuff with Grant Cardone, sponsored GrowthCon 2 years in a row. From there, my brand kind of blew up because I was doing a bunch of stuff with Grant on Grant Cardone TV and things of that nature. And I sponsored GrowthCon. And let me back up. So I was. My third mentor I hired, I was crushing it so much in his program because we have a Facebook group. I was posting checks.
Yeah.
And I already knew how to run a business. Yeah. I was already a successful guy in my 20s. I knew how to talk to people. I knew how to market because I was 34 at the time. You had all these people coming in that had no business experience. And I was like slaying it. And I'm posting these checks and they're like, Rude, you freaking killing it. Well, then one of the sales reps said, hey, do you want to come work in our sales department for the coaching program? I said, yeah, I'll do that. I started slaying it for them, taking sales calls, enrolling people, for their coaching program. And I started, I'm just in between putting out bandit size, looking at properties, and I'm taking calls. I was making $10,000, $12,000 a month working for the coaching program.
Damn.
Crushing it and making $50,000, $60,000 a month wholesaling. Fast forward about 5-6 months later, I'm posting checks in a group and inspiring a bunch of people. They're asking me all the questions, and I come to realize, dude, I'm more talented and better at this than these coaches because I had more experience in business.
Yeah.
And they're asking me all these questions. I'm like, I saw how much money they were making in the coaching program. I'm like, I'm making these dudes all kind of money, and I'm better at this than they are.
Yeah.
I started my own coaching program because I'm coaching, I'm enrolling them and coaching them. Yeah, and they're inboxing me. So I started, fast forward, I was with Grant Cardone. My brand started blowing up because I was doing some stuff with him and sponsoring GrowthCon. And then my brand just blew up after that. And then from there, I started partnering up with my best students in the markets that I wanted to be in. And that's how I blew up my real estate business to all the different states that I'm in now. And then fast forward, you know, a couple years later, I started making a bunch of money again. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and buy and hold again, slow money. And I was like, there's a lot. I read an article by Warren Buffett that mobile homes are the wave of future because inflation, income ain't keeping up. Affordable housing. This is the guy was saying this back in 2015, right? Wow. That we'd have a shortage of houses and things are getting too expensive in colleges, the college debt, and it all made sense. And I had a light bulb. I need to invest in mobile homes. They're everywhere here in Louisiana. And sure enough, I started thinking about mobile homes. What happens? You just start attracting what you think about. A realtor brought me an off-market mobile home park like literally the next week after I read that article, and it was a smoker of a deal. Matter of fact, I still own that park today. I'm selling it in 30 days. I just got it put in a contract. But I bought that mobile home park, and from my wholesaling business, I could buy trailers for like $10,000 because I get all these leads coming. Hey, do you buy trailers to be moved? And I would always tell them no. And I put two and two together. I bought a park and it had empty spots. And I was like, dude, how can you lose buying a trailer for 10 grand and you're getting 750 a month? You can't.
Yeah.
So I took
sometimes
the...
Sometimes they'll give them to you.
Sometimes.
Move it.
Yeah. But I was buying trailers for 2,500, 1,500, 5 grand, 10 grand. And I filled up that whole park. I took that park from 7,200 to about 14,000 in gross income. And I was like, dude, I can't lose on this. The single family homes, I recalibrated, and that from there I just started buying mobile home parks all over the country.
Is that still your main business model?
I have a lot of main business models. I mean, I'd call myself a real estate investor. I don't just do one thing, man. Yeah, you know, I do a ton of wholesaling and flipping. I still own 16 mobile home parks, even though we got two right now we're selling, and I'm gonna probably sell two more. I'm taking some chips off the table. And then, but I would tell you, my main thing is still always going to be the bread and butter of my fast money, right? If you guys follow me, fast, medium, slow money, we talked about that mastermind.
Yeah.
You got to have different buckets, right? So I work every bucket. My fast money is wholesaling and flipping, or wholesaling.
Is that nationwide with your students?
Yeah, well, it's not nationwide. I'm not all over the country. I'm mostly in the South. I'm in about 8 markets,
okay.
You know, and all the, we partner up in JV with all the best students. But wholesaling is my fast money, right? My wife's a realtor also. And if you don't know what fast money, that's stuff that transact on a weekly basis to pay your bills, right? Yes. And then my medium money is flipping and then like smaller land development deals. And my slow money is buying, holding big land development deals, which is what a mobile home parks. And I own an apartment complex, 105 units here. Buy and hold for mobile home parks and then what? Land development, right? So you got to work the three buckets.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to tell you what's my main thing. Well, they're all my main thing. I work on all three of the buckets. And if you do that, you'll build wealth. Because if all you do is wholesale and flip, you're not really building wealth. You're just making
a paycheck,
you're hitting the cash register, but then you're getting taxed heavily.
Yeah.
But if you have some slow money to get some depreciation on the buy and hold side, it offsets you what? Your fast and medium money.
Yeah.
And then if you do land development, that's where the big boys play. That's where you guys rode around, saw four of my developments in the neighborhoods you're building. It's a long process. It takes 2 to 3 years. Right? But it's millions of dollars. You need those big swings. So you work those three buckets, and that's the buckets I work in real estate to make a bunch of money. So
yeah, that's dope, man. I think I saw you, and I want to say it was about maybe 6-7 years ago on YouTube, talking about like mobile home parks and RV parks, and I was listening, and I was like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like, this is big money. This is not like, you're not going to wholesale a house and make 10 grand. Like, the stuff this guy is talking about is serious. So that was cool, man, for me to have followed your content. I appreciate you putting it out there.
Yeah, man.
And now we try to be a good steward of that to ourselves and push the content out. Because
you absolutely
I don't care
should.
Who watches it. But if somebody benefits, that'd be amazing.
Well, if you you live in a day and age where you have no excuses to be successful now. Listen, when I was 20 years old, I didn't have guys like you to follow. I didn't have YouTube. I didn't have all this information. There's no reason you can't get the information. You're just lazy, yeah. Right? So, I mean, it's just we live in a pinnacle of knowledge and resources and technology where you can pull up Zillow and find out what something. Before, you had to call a realtor. You could just plug in an address and figure out the comps like that. So there's and just all the entrepreneurial skill sets you can get from all these guys that are doing big stuff. Now, granted, there's a lot of clowns and bullshit, you know, artists on social media
they're
too.
They're out there.
The jesters
of real estate.
Yeah, they do two deals and they're an expert, right? It's funny because when I got on the scene, like I was already I guess I was humble, but I was already a multimillionaire by the time I was 26.
Yeah.
I had four locations. I owned the real estate, and everything had inflated also. So I was making $500,000 a year. But when I got in the social media scene, I thought everybody was billionaires by the way they act and talk.
And then I know a lot of gurus, man, and they're cash strapped.
Yeah, I go meet them on social media. They look like they're, you know, Donald Trumps, and you meet them in real life. I'm like, I told my wife, I was like, this dude's full of shit. Like, and
your BS detector was going off.
And I had to discern myself and really watch and pay attention. I was like, dude, everybody's full of shit. And so I've kind of, my bullshit meter has developed over the years, and I go into every relationship, hey, you are full of shit until proven otherwise. Not, oh, this dude's cool, let me figure out if he's full of shit. No, you're full of shit until proven otherwise. And that model works better than anything else. If you young guys watching this, you use that?
Use that as your meter.
As your meter.
Yeah.
If something doesn't smell right, if something doesn't look right, it's probably not right.
Yeah.
If they're what they say doesn't match up with what they do or their lifestyle, you know, a lot of these guys flexing cars and all that and this bullshit, like, you know, you can't fake this big house I'm in. You know, I didn't rent this fucking house. You can't fake all my cars. I mean, this is one of my houses, by the way.
Yeah.
I have a house in Destin on the beach. I have a house in Gulf Shores on the beach. Not rented, I own it. Right, I have a huge. I own 16 mobile home parks. I make millions of dollars in real estate. You can't fake that shit, right? But I thought everybody told the truth on social media.
That sucks, man. It sucks that we live in a day and age where you can go on stage and you can profess all this crap and it's not true.
There's no fact checkers.
Yeah.
There's no. We almost need some fact, even though they have some guys that are pages that are attacking these guys. I think it was Ballbusters.
They're
reaming people's asses that are being caught bullshitting the masses, which I think is good.
I love
somebody
it.
Somebody accountable. There's a guy on Twitter doing the same thing.
The GP guy?
Yeah. He's exposing bad GPs.
Yep.
And they're out there.
We're going to interview him.
Well, we're all going to make mistakes as entrepreneurs. I got some mistakes. I got two parks right now I bought that are just one I got rid of. I lost $75,000. Another one, it was out of my control. We bought it, and it was a plant. It was right next to sulfur by the plants, and right when we bought it, they laid off everybody and half our park went empty. I can't control that, but I don't hide behind it. It's like, oh, I'm a real estate investor. Everything goes great.
Always goes good.
Dude, I took a fucking ass whooping in 2023. Yeah. The market doubled, interest rates doubled, insurance, like, no, it's fucking tough to be an entrepreneur, right? And there's more lessons in the losses than if all you listen to is how people win all the time. That's how I know you're full of shit. If you don't talk about your losses, you're absolutely full of shit. There's no way to be an entrepreneur and not take some L's.
Yeah. I think you have to have enough good built up so that when the L's come, it's insignificant.
Yep.
It's like a little something. It's nothing like I said, we got beat on like 120K last year.
Yep.
We got beat on 350K last year, but we were making moves.
Yep.
You know, how do we recover from a $500,000 cash loss from about $2 million wrench?
Yep.
Right? There you go. As long as you have enough W's stacked up, those L's become insignificant. But if anybody pretends that they're not taking L's, they're so full of shit.
100% they're full of shit, man.
Yeah.
It's a game like anything else, and you got it. It's a constant struggle, and you just got to struggle better than everybody else. And it's not always about brains; it's about balls. You need an entrepreneur world. You need more balls than brains, and
consistency and persistence.
Yeah, in the academic world, you need more brains than balls. If you have a W-2 job, you need more brains. This is why academics can't play the entrepreneur game, because we're problem solvers.
Yeah.
We're too stupid to quit.
Yeah,
so
we take extraneous amounts of pain.
Yeah, and it goes back to being, you know, like I was saying about being an extremist. Like most younger kids that are out of control when they're younger, those are the best entrepreneurs when they get older. That's fact. I've watched some of the billionaires. It's really wild. And you watch all these high performance guys that are worth hundreds of millions, even billionaires, almost like clockwork. I would say more than half of them always say I had a learning disability. I wasn't good at school. I barely passed school. I know one guy's a billionaire. He said he was barely. They thought he was, excuse my French, retarded. He's a billionaire now. How is that possible?
Dude, I have like a reading comprehension problem. Mm-hmm. So I can read an article, right? So I went to college. I like anatomy and physiology. I passed with like 102, 101, right? For 2 years, two semesters. But when I read something, like 10% of it absorbs.
Yep.
So I have to read the same thing like 75 times for my brain to be able to pick it up. I have a severe learning disability.
Yep.
But I made $1 million in a week this year.
How is that possible?
Yeah.
You, to academics in school, you're stupid.
Yeah.
You're not smart because you can't read.
Yeah, they probably thought I was retarded.
Yeah. Like, how's that possible?
Kid. But you know, it's like, and that's what he said. Like, what's your superpower? I was like, brute strength. I'm gonna power through anything.
Yep.
Anything, man. You give me losses. You give me anything. I'm gonna power through.
That is a superpower.
That's really all it takes, man.
Yep.
Yeah, like you don't have to give me the instruction manual. Like, tell me what the end result is, and then get the hell out of the way because I'm gonna mess stuff up. Yeah.
Yep.
But I'm gonna get there. Yeah.
I really wanted to ask you, because you said something yesterday that I thought was amazing. Your phone's always in your hand, and you said that you can manage mailers by yourself.
Yep.
We're going to do mailers together, just FYI. Yeah. I can tell you that.
Look how many missed calls I've had.
In the last 10 years.
Okay, so Chris, he says, how many mailers do you send a month right now, or a quarter?
I'm sending, we're spending 53,000, so it's about 78,000.
A month in mailers?
In mailers, yep.
78,000 a month in mailers.
Dude.
Now, do you have a call center?
No call center.
No call center.
Look all the missed calls I had since we had 7 missed calls.
Okay, so I really wanted him to say this because I think this alone was one of the biggest gems here. And there's a lot of gems here, but this is the one that stuck out to me because a lot of people, they're always like, they need 30 people to answer the phone. I'm doing this much amount of mailers. They got mailer expense, which is expensive, and then they got call center expense to answer the calls, and that's expensive. Chris handles all the calls.
Yeah, 78,000
mailers.
Hey, do you know Corey Thompson from Texas?
Mm-mm.
You need to meet him. Oh, you're going to speak at our event in August.
Oh, yeah. We'll come in Texas in August. FYI.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
I'll meet him there. All right. So how in the world do you manage 78,000 mailers with one cell phone, you alone?
You're an animal, bro. You're an animal.
One, work ethic.
Okay.
Two, I don't fuck off. Three, I don't do anything that doesn't make me money.
Okay.
And four, I don't know if it's Monday, Sunday, Tuesday, or Saturday.
It's just a day, ending a day.
It doesn't stop.
I love that.
And the most important thing is that I've gotten so good at answering the phones from answering hundreds of thousands of calls that I've built up what's called unconscious competence and pattern recognitions. If you guys listen to anything I just said, pay attention to this. I've done it so many times. I've been on hundreds of thousands of phone calls that I know every variance, tonality, what they say, how they say it, the pitch of what they say, to the point where I know within 30 to 60 seconds if this is a deal, because why? Pattern recognition. A motivated seller versus a non-motivated seller all say the same things. There's only so many variations. So if you do something for long enough, what happens? You become a what? An expert.
Yep.
This is why most people can't be successful in business and entrepreneurship, because they quit before they get to the pattern recognition part, which is the expert phase, which takes years.
Hours.
Years. Hundreds of thousands of calls. I've been doing this for 9 years. I never understood all those guys. Yeah, I got, you know, I did $2 million in, you know, in revenue and making all kind of money. Okay, how many people you got on your team? 22. How the fuck are you making any money if you got 22 people on your team? Because $2 million ain't that much revenue.
Overhead.
Sounds like all of you.
Yeah, we did.
Like all of you guys are broke.
We did $2 million in revenue and $1.9 million in overhead. You made $100,000 with 22 people and... But they throw these big numbers out. So I take all these calls. So that's the first thing, is the pattern recognition, is that I can save a lot of time. I can qualify a lead in 30 to 60 seconds. That's no bullshit. You could ask the partners, or you were here.
I heard him talking about
it. I do it. I've been doing it for a long time. It works. Secondly, is the skill sets of I'm sorry, back up. No, the skills, we already talked about the pattern recognition. The second most important thing is that I do a lot of direct mail, is that I answer all their questions in the letter before they call me. Okay. They always ask the same thing. Where'd you get my information from? How'd you get my, what, how you think, why you think, did somebody put you up to this? Why you think I want to sell my property? There's only a few different things in there that they'll say, the variation. So in the letter, I put the standard, hey, this is Chris, I'm interested in buying your property at XYZ. And then the next paragraph is I answer all the questions. Oh, and by the way, you're not being targeted. I got your information off a public record. If you're not interested in selling, I'm not trying, nobody's gonna force you or make you sell your property. I'm just asking you if you wanna sell. There is no need to call me back if you're not interested in selling your property. Boom.
That's smart.
That takes out 60 to 70% of the bullshit calls that waste your time saying, hey, where you got my information? Why are you calling me? And so what happens, I can scale my time. Yeah. And I only get what? The best calls. If you call me after you read that letter, you're ready to go.
And you're ready to sell.
And you're ready to sell, that's
you,
right.
You and I are gonna do some mailers.
Dude, let's do it.
It's already done.
All the neighborhoods y'all saw I'm developing?
Yeah.
That's all from direct mail. Most of them from direct mail.
Look, you know we're marketing guys. How many letters or mailers do you think we've sent out in our career so far in 5.5 years?
No idea. Then I guarantee you I could double or triple your business.
After coming to this event, we're doing mailers.
They work.
It's already done, bro. I already know it. I already know it's going to go ridiculous now.
They absolutely work.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. We're partnering on deals immediately in Texas.
No, let's do it, man. I'm next door to you. We're like, you know, we're like your first cousins now because, I mean, y'all are so close to me. We can do deals, and it's easy for me to get to Texas and do a deal with you guys.
Bro, I'll tell you why we go so fast. We've only been in this for 5 years, right? And we're about to have like $100 million a year. We partner with everybody, bro. Everybody.
That's the game.
Everybody's our friend. We'll never hurt anybody. We'll never steal a dime. We'll never take a deal. If a deal's going south and we're going to like 50-50 deal, you can just have our half.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like we love people. We go so fast because we partner with everybody, bro.
That is very smart of you. The best coaches partner with their students.
Yeah. I saw you doing that, dude. I was like, yeah, this guy has it. I told Daniel, I was like, this guy knows what he's doing. It's like we're operating the exact same identical business model in like different universes. Yeah.
And if you're listening, you can do the same thing.
You can do the same thing.
There's plenty of room.
That, absolutely. It gives you, it's a funnel. If the coaching program gives you a funnel because you're showing them what you're doing. They go out, they're like lieutenants for you, and they go out, they bring you the best deals that you would never have access to.
Yep.
That's what I've done.
And everybody wins, bro. I'm going to make
everybody wins.
Everybody should be a coach.
Yep.
Yeah, like,
well, I don't know about everybody should be a coach.
Yeah.
Not until you get, you know, you become somewhat competent in what you're doing.
Here's my thing, is that if today's your day two in the business, you know more than somebody at day zero.
Yep.
Start teaching everybody around you immediately, even if you suck.
Yep.
Yeah. And then it all starts to funnel in, bro. And everybody wins.
Because I think with that point is you find somebody that has a different skill set than you, and then like, hey, you're better at numbers, you run the numbers, I'll keep answering the phone. And if I need to run numbers, you run the numbers.
Dude, that's how we became partners. It's when you guys were talking about like what makes a good partner.
Yep.
He's all like systems, back end, yep. CRM, VAs, everything, and I never look at it. I never check. I never check.
And you need guys like that. I'm the same. I'm more like you. I'm like hard nosed. Let's just fucking go. Yeah. Let's just fucking go. And I don't want to. I need people to keep me organized. You have to have a yin to your yang.
Damage control.
Yeah, you can't have two hardcore drivers or too many chiefs, right? So you gotta partner up with people that have opposite skill sets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that was the whole like concept behind Hivemind is like it's like the unification of multiple brains and skill sets.
Yep.
And information.
So
I love that hive mind. I mean, it's true. It's you know,
it's
I love it.
It is, and we talk about this like it's not a brand. Hive mind is not our company. It's something that already exists.
Yep.
And all we're doing is like trying to help facilitate it. Like we're trying to like manage something that already exists. So we're just like we slap the brand on it, and that's the game, dude. So yeah, partnering with people, helping it. Like here's the ultimate phrase that I say. Is that there's unlimited amounts of capital and there's unlimited deal flow, but nobody ever has both at the same time.
That's true.
That's the hive mind, bro.
Yep.
So you partner.
I would add to that, you need more allies and less friends.
Ooh, dang, that's a bar. That's a tweet.
Allies help you make money, friends bullshit you and get you hungover.
Yeah.
That's a good one. what is a quote that is yours or somebody else's that you resonate with?
A quote that somebody else's?
It's no, yours.
Anybody's. Anybody's. A quote that you love.
Oh, a quote that I love that's not mine.
It could be yours.
Well, let's go with someone that's not mine. I love the quote by Jim Rohn that your income seldomly exceeds your personal development. Meaning, the more personally developed you are, the more you work on yourself, the more money you make. I'm a big personal development advocate. You need to work on yourself harder than your business when you first get started, because that's what I did when I was 22. I hit zero.
You work on yourself harder than you work on yourself.
I hit zero at 21. I was like, man, I'm fucking up, and I just poured into myself, right? And that's why I made money. That's why I was skilled up. As you guys that follow me, I talk about skilling up. It's all skills, yeah. Right? You're gonna fall back to the level of your skills, yeah. Right? Not your luck. You're gonna fall back to the level of how skilled you are.
Dude, I love that quote, man. I'll tell you something I never said on the podcast before. I was like with my brothers or something. We walked to the mall, right? When I was a kid, I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And we walked into a bookstore, and I wasn't interested in fantasy, right? I'm not interested in fiction. So everybody's like, oh, this book. And I'm in the bookstore just like a kid that just walked into a pyramid. I'm like, there seems to be a lot of information in here. And I'm looking around. Nothing's interesting to me at all. And I saw one that said self-help, personal development. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell do you mean self-help? Like, what do you mean by that? And I just picked up one book and started like looking in there, thumbing through it, addicted.
Yep.
For the rest of my life now. As a kid, I got myself addicted to personal development. And it took every bit of 20 years for me to kind of round out. Yep. But dude, I love it, bro. So I love the quote, like literally. Yeah.
And then, piggyback on that, you can do all this stuff right and be personally developed and work on yourself all the time, but if the people you're around aren't doing the same shit, they're going to hold you back. That's why I created allies. That's why I have no friends. And when I say I have no friends,
if you're
a grown man like me, you need a bunch of friends. Let's just be real. You're super insecure.
Yeah.
I want to be around men that want to build together.
Yeah.
Not get drunk and just talk about fucking LSU and Alabama and just nonsense, mindless entertainment. I want to be around men that are freaking going to, they have goals, they build together. That's what I say when I have no friends, only allies. All of my friends are entrepreneurs that are partners. Yeah. That's allies. That's what the Allies Mastermind is about. That's what you came over here and experienced. All these people are trying to make money, build wealth together, create meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
And help each other.
When somebody asked me like, hey, do you watch football? I feel like kind of personally attacked.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like embarrassed for them. Like,
yep.
Damn, I wish you never asked me that. Like, I don't know how to answer that. Like,
you got too much time on your hands, my friend.
Oh, man. I have
must
not.
Be nice, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, hey, you see the game? I'm like, I don't watch sports. I feel so attacked. I'm like, I feel embarrassed for the person. Like, I can't do that.
Yeah, they look at you like something's wrong with you because you don't know every statistic of every football player. I didn't even know who was playing the Super Bowl 2 or 3 weeks ago. I had to ask my wife.
I still don't know.
Yeah, and you got these guys with all these jerseys on, fired up and like screaming and getting in fist fights with the other team. And they wouldn't even fight for their own financial freedom. But they're going to beat up a guy because he's the competition of a team they don't even play on.
They have a different shirt on.
They don't pay them either.
You're cheering for these millionaires like, y'all go win. Like, why don't you win by yourself?
Yeah, dude, I mean, I don't want to be in the stands. I want to be on the field. I want to play. Like, it's ridiculous.
You know, I see the same thing with movies. My wife has to, like lock me in handcuffs to the chair to watch a movie with her. Because, like, this guy's rich. This guy's living his dreams. And then I have to sit on the couch and watch it as my source of entertainment. Like, No, thank you. No. Mm-mm. I'm good. My life's good. I don't want to watch a TV screen of what somebody else is having an amazing life.
That's
not
right.
Interested.
That's right.
It's all fake anyway.
Yep. No, you got to get away from the mindless entertainment. Like I told you guys when I was speaking, like I don't fuck off. I don't do any mindless entertainment. Everything is growth and value driven. Everything is intentional. Everything is purposeful. I only do stuff that moves the needle in my life. That's it. Everything else is bullshit.
Even if it's not for me, bro, I'm trying to move the needle for my wife, trying to move the needle for my kids, my parents, my sister, him, his family, like, even if my needle is already moved, I'm trying to move it for other people now.
Yep.
So I have zero time to give, zero crap to give. We're not wasting. Dude, I work, bro. People are like, hey, you guys are lucky, man. You guys are doing all this stuff. And I'm just working my ass off, and I'm not even looking at what's happening behind me. I don't look at the likes. I don't look at the comments. I'm working, bro.
Yep.
And I got that vibe from coming to this event. Like, dude, this guy's on it. That's why we like, hey, this guy's like Corey Thompson. That's Corey, bro. He's one of our mentors.
You're
He's
like
one
him.
Of our friends from, yeah. from Texas.
Like
He's a nut, bro. He rubs people the wrong way for a living.
Because he guy, probably tells the truth.
The guy works tells his ass truth. Off, bro. He's a guru destroyer. He works his ass off. And I admire that because that's all I care about. I just want to work. Yeah. I'll be working. I'm dying and like, hey, you only got like 72 hours to live. I'm like, shit, I got to make like 6 phone calls.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We ain't got a whole lot of time.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah, I'm going, bro. I'm working, bro. Yeah. Super good event, dude. I'm so glad we met. I feel like we're going to be friends for life.
Absolutely.
I didn't know how real you were until we came to this event. And we got more than we bargained for, man. We were kind of already like fans, but now we're super fans, bro. So I'm just glad to know you as a friend and as a person, dude.
Absolutely. You got an ally now.
Yeah, we're about to make some money.
That's right. Let's
so
do it.
Where can people find you online? You have your Allies Mastermind. Mm-hmm. You've been saying ally a lot, but where can people find you online and tell us a little about the Allies Mastermind?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Real Estate Rude and Chris Rude Entrepreneur. I have 2 pages, and then Facebook, Chris Rude. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on YouTube at Chris Rude Entrepreneur. And then I have the Allies Mastermind where we do them every...
How much is it? What do you cover? When is the call? All that stuff.
So the Allies, I have layers of it. Allies Mastermind is every quarter, and I do them all over the country. We did this one at my house because we specifically focus on land development, but I usually do them all over the country. That's every quarter. That's $5,000. It's not cheap to be a part of my group. Like, it's expensive.
No, $5,000 is cheap. That's amazing.
For the value.
Amazing.
For
we made $5,000 just by coming.
Yeah, you got to listen to guys that are worth a lot of money pour into you guys with all the mistakes. I mean, you were there. So it's $5,000 if you just want to come one and done, or you can join the mastermind, which is $3,000 down, $1,000 a month for a year. You get coaching calls every Wednesday. You get to talk to me personally. You come to the events every quarter. And then I have a local group called Alliance. If you're local to, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, and it's not far, I have a meetup at this house every other month, which is only $500 a month. And we have a mastermind for about a half a day every other month. So I'll probably have you guys come to one of those too. And then you can go to chrisrude.com if you want to book a call with me. And then, you know, we can get on a call if you need coaching or whatever. So that's kind of where I'm at.
You've never seen a more transparent guru than Chris, man. And love the vibes, love the energy. The people that were in the room were amazing, right? So if you haven't been to the mastermind at least once, you should definitely come. I mean, like, I think we're doing okay, but when you come and you get in a room with people like this, like, no matter what, there's somebody that can take you to the next level. And you're like, well, man, I don't have $5,000 to go to a mastermind. You definitely need to find the $5,000 because what the $5,000 is going to make you a million. Yeah.
Listen, guys, I got over $1 million in personal development. That's no bullshit. I've spent over $1 million in coaches, mentors, personal development, books, classes, everything. It works. You're compressing time. You're figuring out what a man had to labor hard for, and he's giving it to you in a silver platter where you can do it easily and take all the mistakes out. So, and these are million. I got one business. I'm $1.6 million in the hole too, right? All the other guys, they didn't just tell you all their wins. They told you their losses. So if you got all that information, the losses are more important than the wins.
Yep. So if you're thinking about it, right, like as far as like making an investment in yourself and somebody, you got to get around the people that are doing it. And the people that are doing it have lost a lot. Right? They've got the teeth kicked in the butt. So you can do it yourself. You can invest. Not only are you losing the capital, right, because you're not making moves, but you're losing the time. If it takes you 5 or 10 or 15 years, and then you get in a room like this, and those guys take you to the next level, you know, that's something that you need to think about. It's like the $5,000 is so insignificant because you're going to lose probably millions by not coming. So check out Chris Rude Mastermind. Check out the in-person events. We learned a lot. We met some really good people. And now we've made an ally that we're about to start making a lot of money with.
Absolutely. You can't afford not to come, guys. That's no bullshit.
Yeah, so. I'm so glad we came. Thank you for the invite, dude.
Absolutely, man.
Badass event. It was amazing. Food was amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
Food was amazing. Just come for the food, guys. Thanks, guys. Like, subscribe, holler at us. Chris, thank you for having us, bro. Beautiful house, beautiful energy, dude. Beautiful business. Love it, man. Love it, love it, love it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
We'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.